This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning. I'm David Ellis. Welcome to this edition of the program. It is the 9th day of October 2020. With me as my producer and technical operator is Dennis Johnson. As usual, we go up until 2 o'clock. And the number for you to reach us at is 4341790, or you can WhatsApp us at 266-4862. It's raining outside. There is a tropical wave, another one passing by us. And I am told that already there may be some flooding in parts of St. Philip. So we need to be cautious out there today. But you can keep us abreast of what is happening. Did you get a chance to take a look at that letter to the editor, which was written by Sheila Stewart, calling for some examination of the proposed ICBL takeover? That letter was written or published 2 days ago. And if you didn't get a chance to read it, the person expressed profound distress and consternation at what has taken place there. She projected it as a proposed hostile takeover of ICBL by a company called Paynes Bay Finance Inc. through the wholly owned subsidiary Hamilton Finance Limited at a price of 89 cents US per common share as a cash offer. And she said that her distress is that yet another proposed complete takeover, it is a proposed complete takeover of a once fully owned Barbadian corporation. And to add insult to injury, the company was offering the sum of $1.98 Barbados or less per share to shareholders wishing to accept the offer. When as she said, on the last trading day, on September 2nd, 2020, the price for that stock on the Barbados Stock Exchange was $3. And Ms. Stewart went on to say that she had invested in ICBL because she saw it as something that could provide for her, this investment could provide for her in her retirement. Now we're going to start the program today with a little bit more of an examination of this particular deal. And I have with me on the line via Zoom, Doug Skeet, who has been one of those working tirelessly on the examination of this situation where minority shareholders feel that they are disadvantaged and need to let their voices be heard. Mr. Skeet, are you with us? Good morning. I think his audio is connecting. But we are going to hear from him a little bit on how he sees this situation. To what extent does he agree with the person who wrote this letter to the editor that shareholders are being disadvantaged in all of this? In the meantime, let me come to the telephone lines and take the first call of the day while we try to connect with Doug Skeet. And, we are not talking exclusively about this particular issue today, though. We're just starting the program with it. There is still a lot for us to talk about out there. The political parties are gearing up for their canvassing this weekend in the St. George North by-election. There remains a lot of concern about how we are dealing with issues of schooling in particular, where COVID is concerned. I saw the acting chief medical officer of health pointing out that people should avoid stigmatizing the Ellerslie School because there's a lot of fear associated with the fact that two students of that school have tested positive, and it's having a ripple effect. You have people who are coming from households that the children are students of Ellerslie, and that in itself is generating some measure of anxiety in some quarters as well. Is Doug Skeet with us? I can see him, but I can't hear him. I don't understand. Oh. All right, so call us at 434-1790. Let's hear your thoughts on what's going on in Barbados today. We are very keen to engage you on the topics of the day. I don't want to jumpstart or prejudice what people may have to say about what is going on, but there's quite a bit in terms of what is happening internationally, because that has implications for us as well. Intense focus on what is the lead up to the elections in the United States and all that has been going on there with respect to President Trump, his illness, and all of that. So what are your thoughts on that as well? What's happening within the region? Some people have been looking at the situation in Guyana with a degree of intensity as well. The recent crackdown on people who were associated with the electoral process. Charges have been brought against people there. And all of that is, I've heard people raise the concern here on this program, to the effect that CARICOM has basically abandoned Guyana, and it should be playing more of a role in trying to get the Irfan Ali administration to abide by certain principles. Of course, in all of that, the concept of sovereignty and non-interference in internal affairs comes to the fore, but I know there are critics who will say, but you know what, this principle must have been relevant during the election campaign too, when CARICOM sent an observer mission there. This is Down to Brass Tacks. We have a caller on the line. Welcome to the program. Hello? Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air? Hello.
Good morning, David.
Yes, morning.
I lose part of my red. I thought you all was off air.
Okay. How can I help you this morning?
I didn't really hear you. I didn't even get a chance to hear your opening remark. But as I told you, and that I don't really want to speak about this St. George North by election, and I'm going to try to stay as far as possible as I really can from it. But what made me decide to call this morning is that I heard some news on your station coming from Joe Attlee. And his main concern is that this was not the right time for government to be calling up an election due to the fact that we're in a COVID-19 period. And his main concern also is that candidates will be going knocking on doors, households where they be grandmothers and grandfathers at the same houses. Now, I, David, would like to ask Joe Attlee, if he is so concerned about the mothers, grandmothers, and grandfathers, I want to know whether it is that he won't close his church in order to protect these same people.
But the church doesn't follow certain protocols?
But his concern is that you'll be knocking on doors, and due to the fact that this is an outdoor environment, meetings will be held outdoors, canvassing will be held outdoors. But in his case, his service will be held in an indoor facility.
I don't understand how you can look at these two and, you know, disregard completely the concern associated with COVID and campaigning in Barbados today. You know, one of the things associated with campaigning is that people converge on various points. They tend to be closer together at points. They sometimes can be quite exuberant at political gatherings. It's difficult sometimes to control behavior. And I think there are many people who would look at this period and be somewhat concerned about being involved in that process. Yes, there are protocols that are also to be employed there, but the nature of political campaigns, you know, they have a way of putting people in a frame of mind where they can lose perspective. And therefore, I think that Joe Atherley is not the only person who would be concerned about a political campaign taking place here and now. I do recall, I mean, this is on a very limited scale because it is a by-election, but I believe a similar concern had been expressed in Trinidad. There are people here who looked at Trinidad and Jamaica's elections the other day and anticipated that there was most likely going to be a spike in coronavirus cases after those elections.
But David, you as an individual has your own ideas where you can distance yourself at political meetings rather than being sitting inside a building, an enclosed building. That's my point to you.
It's canvassing. It's not just the political meeting, but it is the canvass as well. I think, you know, at the end of the day, I think we need to go where I said we should from the very beginning. Each person has to take responsibility for self. And we have to be kind of cognizant of the threats that lie out there. You know, a lot has happened. I saw a story the other day, I mean, overnight or so. The Prime Minister of St. Kitts and Nevis was telling his own people that they need to avoid being as complacent as Trinidad and Tobago and Barbados have been in dealing with COVID. Now, Barbados has controlled COVID pretty well. And we've done it, from what I see, a better job than has been the case in Trinidad in recent times. But yet he's lumped us together. From where he sits in St. Kitts, he believes that, you know, we have demonstrated a measure of complacency in dealing with it. The officials in Barbados won't tell you that.
But I can come to your arguments, you know, one after the next.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember quite clearly, and not only me or the people here in Barbados, the worldwide who listen to your station would know that only a couple of Sundays ago, these same church people were on brass tacks asking government to ease the protocol in order for them to bring more people into their services. So I find it rather strange that he comes with that sort of notion.
But he was among them?
But there were the churches.
Was he among them?
I don't know, to be quite honest.
Precisely. So you can't ascribe to him what came from other people?
I better go further and come to you also with this one. You know what, man, what will really make the matters really worse, David?
What?
We are now hearing a Saul Leacock. I don't know if Joe actually noticed the individual, but he is now trying to mobilize the same churches in order to march in this COVID-19 environment. Answer that question for me.
Well, if you march, you march, recognizing that there are supposed to be protocols as well. I mean, don't forget, it had Black Lives Matters marches across the United States in COVID.
Yes, don't forget, you're talking about canvassing. Yes, no, we should be concerned about canvassing.
Well, I think that all of... Look, let me put it to you quite frankly. I am not from the church. I think that all of it needs to be brought under some degree of scrutiny, whether it is canvassing, whether it is the churches, whether it is the bars, all. And I'm not here, like you, to say that if you do one, you're going to be able to do the other. I think that we need to be concerned about all of it. Yeah, that's where I stand.
Joe, I didn't give me that impression.
Well,
he's just concerned about what's going on right now in St. George North.
Well, you didn't ask him what happens in his church. You assume that in his church, he flouts protocol and is not interested.
Yeah, but let me tell you something. Their grandmothers and grandfathers who go into church at this present on Sundays or whenever he has service in that same church too, he should protect those people too. He should be concerned about those old people.
So implicit in what you're saying is that you, to some extent, seem to agree that we need to be cautious in canvassing as it relates to COVID.
Yes, I do.
And that we should attach the same caution to what happens in the churches.
But what's good for you, goose is good for yander.
All right, well.
You know?
Basically, it seems as though ultimately the two of you are on the same wavelength.
How so?
Well, you agree that there should be caution in relation to the canvassing. You haven't gone as far as to say that you don't think that the by-election should have taken place at all.
But I got no problem with the by-election being held now. We're going to live in this COVID environment.
We have to live in the COVID environment no matter what. So in your judgment, it was essential for us to have this by-election. Agreed?
I don't know if it's essential, but I know it was called and it should go on. I don't see why. We're coming from Atlee as far as you're concerned. Is a sign of defeat. He saw the surrender right now. Bella here heard him. And I think that's the problem. But don't let me go yet. I ain't going yet. You know what I believe? I believe that the police should not give this church no permission to march in this environment.
How on earth, on the one hand, you can support a political campaign in this environment, but you can't support a march?
No, but
people are going to ask you that.
No, I'm counting them. If they have this problem with by election being held, then they should not be out for march.
But the same people who are calling for the march are not the same people who are talking about the by election.
Yeah, but I'm talking about your church.
But Joseph Atherley don't speak on behalf of the entire church.
He is a part of the church.
Man, you're being ridiculous, man.
And he knows Saul.
You are being ridiculous.
I would like to believe that he also knows Saul Leacock.
Paul Leacock, not Saul. He's from
Paul?
Yes, he's from Saul to Paul.
It's Saul.
He's Paul, I'm telling you.
It's Saul, S-A-U-L, Saul.
P.
Huh? P?
P.
I thought it was
from
Saul.
From Saul to Paul, without going to walking the road to Damascus.
Okay, but there's a lot of political hypocrisy.
All right. But you know what?
Tell me.
You know that. You could also be accused of the same thing.
Well, no matter what.
Okay.
But that's my impression.
All right, sir.
Hypocrisy.
All right. Down to brass tacks. Let's make another attempt to see if we can hear from Doug Skeet. Mr. Skeet, are you available? That seems to be a lost cause. Let's take another call. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Hi.
Trust you are going good. I am a ICBL shareholder, so I'm giving support to the, I think you said Ms. Short who wrote the article?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm just giving support to her because I feel very insulted as a minority shareholder with the price of basically Barbados $1.78. This is a little more than half the trading price as at September of $3. The major shareholder would have sold their shares for that. We don't know why they wanted to get out. That's for them. But obviously, you know, with that offer, it now means that's the offer that the purchaser, the offeree will put out there for others. And, to me, I was advised that the ICBL board should render an opinion to the minority shareholders to give a valuation opinion. We have heard, or I have not seen anything coming from the board of directors regarding this matter. what's our legal redress for minority shareholders under Section 195 of the Companies Act, 193, sorry. You know, you can petition the court for fair value, but that costs money and that's time. And on top of that, to add further insult to injury, not really to injury for the minorities, we are asked to pay the transaction fee for when the shares are transferred. I mean, in other situations, which I have been in, and yes, you know, they've had offers where you can come and purchase and they take over the company. They usually pay the transaction fee because they're getting it at a cheaper price anyway. This company is getting at a way cheaper price and still asking us, the minorities who will lose, to pay the transaction fees on the share when they're transferred. I just think it's so insulting. I am so fed up with buying shares in Barbados. And before you look around, the companies are sold. You don't have any investment. We are being told, invest, invest. Don't keep all your money in the bank because we ain't getting nothing for it anyways. You go and invest, and then somebody comes and gobbles up the country, for which you can't do anything about, because that's the liability of a public company. It can be bought over by anybody. But still, I mean, you know, it's just so sad. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I remember the statement from the late Arab Bar saying that one day Bajans will wake up and we will own nothing. And I think I don't know if it was a curse. I don't think he might have said it like that. But it seems to be soon happening because there are very few.
How much of this has happened to you as an individual over the years?
Well, not wanting to put my stuff out there. This is probably about the third or fourth company that I have been in and have to endure this. So you can understand my frustration, because you buy shares, you know, to invest, and they tell you when you buy shares, you want to buy them for a period of time. You want to keep them for what? Probably pass them on to your children, whatever. But here I am. My statement that comes from the Securities Exchange is dwindling. I don't know. There are probably about what, two or three left, and I'm watching them very closely because I saw an interesting appointment at a very big public company, mm-hmm. and I'm watching that closely. I guess that's the way the world is going, you know, where everybody, you know, these big conglomerates that have a lot of money just going into all these third world countries or whatever, looking for lucrative companies. You can't blame them. They have money they need to invest. And just seeking out the majority shareholders or shareholders that have quite a bit of shares and offering them good, you know, good prices, and then they go in and take them over.
So I think we've connected now with Doug Skeet,
okay.
who tends to represent the interests of the minority shareholder. Doug right. Skeet, good morning.
Good morning, David.
Finally, thank you very much for joining us.
Yes.
You've heard this lady's story, and she reflects what so many people in this country have seen over the years. They tell you invest, you put your money in this company and that company, and then at the end of the day, she's had three or four situations, she says, where, this being the latest, where it seems as though you're disadvantaged as a shareholder.
That's quite right, and where she's quite right. We're seeing this happening over and over and over. And it begs the question whether there's any incentive for Barbadians.
Before you go any further, I just want to make sure if there's any noise from the radio coming back at your end, turn it off or turn it down.
Okay.
Thanks. Yes.
Uh-huh. All right, that's better?
Uh-huh, that's better.
Right. Yeah. And so we're saying that we've been seeing a trend over the years where Barbadians have been asked to invest in these public companies. And then after they've done that, there's some other entity that comes along, sees or finds the company attractive, the company in which Barbadians have invested, find them attractive, and then there's this takeover offer or bid, then winding up with the Barbadian shareholders having to sell their shares. In fact, sometimes compulsory, without their agreeing to sell. They've been forced to sell their shares. And this, you know, this trend doesn't necessarily have to happen that way. But it seems as though the ones buying do not want to have Barbadians shareholders remaining in their companies, because there's an alternative method where the buyer can exchange shares in his company, his or her company, for the shares that Barbadians own in the companies that are being taken over. And that way, Barbadians wouldn't have to sell their shares and be deprived of an investment.
Well, based on the trend, what can be done? I mean, this is undermining public confidence in this form of investment. The government is coming to Barbadians and telling them, oh, we are opening up all these other opportunities. But the same thing can happen even in those areas. So how are we going to be protected, recognizing what the trend is? What can be done?
Short of legislation, there's really nothing one can do to stop this trend. One would have to appeal to the purchasers, those buying, to suggest to them that there's an alternative method. And that's the one I just mentioned. You don't have to buy out the shareholders in the sense that they then no longer become holders of shares in that company.
There's moral
suasion. But it seems, but it seems as though that is the intent. So you look at the companies, the more recent one is ICBL, where we've just had last month an offer being made to the minority shareholders to purchase their shares. Prior to that, there was CIBC, First Caribbean, and there was Bank Holdings, Cable and Wireless. So you can go down the line. And what that suggests is that the individuals or entities buying clearly don't want to have any minority shareholders in the companies or company or companies that they're buying. So as you said, unless you can say to them, look, this is the way to go. The only exception to this type of behavior is in the case of Barbados Light and Poor, where they made their offer more attractive in suggesting to the Barbadian shareholders that they could own shares in the Canadian parent. And that was a fantastic move. So maybe if we can set that as the yardstick by which other companies could aspire to, then we wouldn't see this continuing trend where Barbadians are looking. I mean, everybody, the government is saying you need to invest, and then they see an investment vehicle other than commercial banks, credit unions, and so forth, and then they go into these companies only within a short space of time to be bought out.
Let me see if the caller
is still, unfortunate.
If the lady is still on the line.
Hello, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, ma'am.
Right.
You have any comment?
I totally agree with Doug what he's saying. There's really not much you can do once a company is public. You know, you can't really get protection that way. Maybe legislation might help to protect some, give for minority shareholders on how things have done. But there's really not much you could do.
I want to explore this question of legislation. What kind of legislation are we talking about, Doug?
Well, and I don't know that you would find this. The type of legislation would have to say that a person buying an entity, buying a company on the stock exchange, would have to, other than buying out the shareholders, that they would have to find some other alternate means by keeping the shareholders as investors, so that in the case of ICBL, for instance, you're making an offer to buy out the minority shareholders, then you might have to offer those shareholders an incentive or a chance to purchase shares in the company that is that is doing the buying, that is the purchaser. So for instance, what's wrong with saying, I see Bial, we want to buy the share, your shares, but in return, we can offer you shares in this company called Hamilton Finance Limited. So we will, Hamilton Finance will own all the shares in ICBL, but we would exchange your shares, that is the minority shareholders, we would exchange your shares in ICBL for shares in Hamilton. So you would still continue to be a shareholder, though be not in ICBL. So minority shareholders still get to own shares in an entity. It may not be an entity on the stock exchange and on the Barbados Stock Exchange, but nevertheless, it may be an entity outside of Barbados, which may be performing much better. And therefore, that too has with it that they, if they pay dividends, those dividends might very well be paid in a currency other than Barbados dollars. So a good example again is Light and Poor. That today Barbadian shareholders in the Canadian operation of Light and Poor that are, they're getting dividends, and those dividends are probably, if not in Canadian, in US dollars.
The question is though, would this legislation have the potential to scare away investors?
Precisely, because you know, you're trying to fix one problem and you may create another, in that a purchaser comes along and those purchasers are saying, you know, I want to own 100% of this company, and I don't want those minorities. See, because the vivid thing with this is what I think happens is you have these companies have to have shareholders meetings, annual meetings. And I get the sense, particularly on the experience on the local stock exchange, that most of the majority shareholders are not keen to have minority shareholders coming into meetings and asking questions and questioning decisions that they're making or that they have made. So they see minority shareholders as a nuisance. And to the extent they would rather have the meetings where there are no minority shareholders. So that could very well be one of the reasons. And if you attend some of these AGMs or the public companies, you tend to see that that is the behavior exhibited by directors. You know, who are you to question us? So we can make decisions then, and we shouldn't be questioned.
The ICBL matter goes a little further. They are the shareholders, the minority shareholders, are complaining about price. Do they have valid point there?
They do have a valid point, but here's what the acquirer or the offerer would be saying. The BF&M, which is the Bermuda, what was previously the ultimate holding company that ultimately owned ICBL, that company, BF&M, based in Bermuda, as you would remember, sometime I think it was earlier this year, September the 3rd, decided to sell their 51% interest in ICBL. Now, that sale was, you can almost categorize it as a fire sale. BFM and the Bermuda company seemingly wanted to get out of their interest. They wanted to have no connection with ICBL because of what we know transpired last year with these questionable transactions that became subject to a court case in the United States. They were burnt in that sense. Their reputation presumably was tarnished, and they felt that they need to move on. And they seem as though they were willing to sell their shares. Certainly the sale of BF&M 51% was sold at a price, the same price that is being offered now by this new company, was offered way below the stock price. So the price was, stock price was around $3, and BF&M, the Bermuda holding company, sold their shares at 178. So that's a substantial discount, around 30% discount. They were willing to take a loss, at least a price lower than the market price, to get out of ICBL, and that is what they did. Now, the acquirer, which is Payne's Bay Finance, then having acquired the 51%, was required to make an offer to the other because they went over the 25% threshold, which therefore triggered a takeover. And they were...
Yeah, I think we've lost our connection there with Doug Skeet. We're looking at this whole question of the takeover bid.
If they paid ICBL. 178, ICBL, yeah. ICBL, sorry. If they paid 178 to BF&M, the Bermuda company, it is seem unlikely that they were going to offer a higher price to the minority shareholders. So their rationale is I'm offering you, the minority shareholders, the same price that I paid BF&M, the Bermuda holding company. And that would be their rationale. But on the face of things, one has to ask whether it's a fair price. Now, the only way you can do that, you would have to test that in the law courts of Barbados. But they're justified in saying that this price is certainly lower than what was trending on the stock exchange. But how do you correct that? And the only way you can correct that is presumably, unless the acquirer is willing to take the offer off the table and increase it, which I would doubt very much. The only way you can do that is, again, if there's more persuasion, you can achieve it. There are about 2,000, just about 2,100 shareholders. I don't know whether if they all, well, there's some shareholders outside of Barbados, but the bulk are in Barbados. They would all have to get together and really create a stink and hope that the acquirer would be willing to be, you know, would take that their feelings into account and make an alternate offer.
We have quite a number of calls, so we need to kind of mix these calls up. We're not talking exclusively about this question by CBL, but we'll have Doug Skeet here to answer any questions or get any comments from you in relation to this matter as we continue with an open forum here on this edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Let's take another caller. Hello?
Good morning.
Yes, morning.
Yes, I want to put another view. Would it not be, we have not heard the government, like National Insurance Board and the credit, and the Public Workers Credit Union, who would be the other major shareholders. My understanding is that if National Insurance Board does not sell what their interest and the credit union, the private shareholders will have a better chance of keeping their shares. Because my understanding, if they sell, then compulsory, they will have more than 80% of the shares, and then they can do a compulsory takeover. But I am wondering if the government, through National Insurance Board, should not be saying something to the public.
Mr. Skeet, what do you think about that?
Yeah, well, from the information in the... let's mention one thing, David. I went on the ICBL website, and there's no indication there. There's no evidence of the most recent set of financial statements, their 2019 financial annual report. So there's something lacking there. There's some reason why those and that annual report is not on their website. On the stock exchange, it's not there either. But just as the correction there, yes, the National Insurance Board is the second largest owner of shares in ICBL. They own 3.9 million shares, and they hold, that represents about 10% of the outstanding shares of ICBL. That has been, they've disclosed all entities holding more than 5%, and there are only two of them, the National Insurance Board and the company that is now buying, has just recently bought the 51%. Other than that, they seem to be smaller. I'm not sure if the any of the credit unions, they may, but it would obviously be less than 5%. The question is whether the government, all evidence points to wherever these takeovers have occurred, the National Insurance, when they've owned shares in most of these entities, have always sold their shares and have never sided with the minority in trying to retain the ownership of their shares. So, and particularly in these times, the National Insurance Board, where this provides the cash injection, there's a good chance, whether the price is fair or not, that they will sell their shares. The only way here, David, would be to say to all the shareholders, just to hold your shares and not sell. And that way, this transaction would not go through.
But that's hard to achieve.
I think it would be naive to think that no one would sell. Every single shareholder would not sell their shares.
Yes, because the price at the beginning of September was $3 per share, and then they sold to the new company at $178, which it seems that BF&M just wanted to give up their ownership of ICB, because it's a remarkable drop from $3 to $178.
The question is whether a valuation was done to determine the price that was offered.
No.
Is there any indication that this was done, Doug Skeet?
No. From the information we have, no valuation. The offer document does not mention a valuation. And again, that would be if the minority shareholders want to challenge this offer. As I said in the opening remarks, they would obviously have to go to court. And one of the things they would have to do would be to say to the court, there's a need for a valuation, a professional, independent professional valuation to be done of ICBL to determine a fair value of the shares. Now, the shares on the stock exchange might not necessarily, might not be the fair value. I mean, that's a price that the stock exchange facilitates, the exchange of shares. And so that doesn't necessarily mean that's the true, that's the fair value. It's just a medium for exchanging shares. It may give an indication of where the fair value might be, but a valuation would probably better establish that. So if we use the stock price as a benchmark, then we're talking about $3. It could be more than that. But it could be less, but my sense is it was probably be more.
But so, one person suggests to me that it is unlikely that the major shareholder would accept 89 cents US per share without some kind of valuation being done.
But we don't know. We certainly don't know what took place between the Bermuda company and the company that acquired that 51%. There's no evidence of a valuation, so we don't know. We can only speculate. But based on the stock price, one would have thought that $3, anything below $3, anyone selling those shares. The other, here's the other thing, David, is usually when a company is acquiring a minority interest, there's usually some premium that is paid for the shares, because you're not only getting majority control, you're getting the other benefits you are acquiring. So that $3, as I pointed out, if you're acquiring a 51%, a premium could be anything above, could be 20%, could be 50%, you know, could be 100%. So whether there's a valuation, that would not, we would not be aware, because we're not privy to the those that meeting or discussions between the Bermuda company and Hamilton Finance, the company that just acquired that 51%. Mm-hmm. But if there's, it would be interesting to see it and see the rationale. If it said it was 178, the rationale for that 178 would make interesting reading.
This person says here that I am an ACBL shareholder. I'm not interested in any share exchange. I am taking my money no matter how little. My consolation is that I received dividends over the years, so technically I haven't lost. Plus, I got the tax benefit at the time of purchase. No share exchange for me, says this person.
I just want to think that this is my last comment. I think that Barbadian shareholders should at least try to come together, if it's possible to have a meeting to trash out, and perhaps a lot more may be said at a meeting than you will hear on the radio. That's my contribution.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for your contribution. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the show. Hello. 4341790, that's the number for you to call. So what we have here is a situation, Mr. Skeet, where quite a number of people are just, I suppose, out to sea to a large extent, finding themselves in a situation where after all these years of looking at certain institutions, I mean, one of the concerns that is certain to come as a result of what is happening here is you've seen these companies like ICBL, which was state-owned. You had Barbados National Bank, which was state-owned. And there was a rationale given to us for having those companies at the time. But by releasing them, and a lot of it had to do with the notion that the private sector could better operate these entities, they can make more of a profit, create more of an environment for growth and development and for jobs in the country. But the national pride component also comes into play. People feel somewhat hurt to see that institutions like these would change hands, not just private sector hands, but ultimately go into foreign hands. And the question, you know, what is it that we are holding on to? What do we consider to be in our national interests? How do you see it?
That may only be a 4% return, 3 or 4% return on your investment. Mm-hmm. And to recover your investment on that basis of 4%, you probably take you 25 years. So if you have to wait for 25 years and you're cashing out now before, then you're probably not any better off.
Okay, let's take another call. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You're on the air. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, hello. I came in late on this discussion, but I am particularly disturbed about the fact that an institution that has meant so much to Barbados has been taken to this length, to the extent that the existing shareholders are being, to my mind, somewhat insulted by the amount that's being offered. I would assume that an institution that is so important to Barbados that would be a lot more interest, especially on the part of the not only the existing shareholders but also government. I would have to do a guess as to if there was some means in which Barbadians are involved in developing a mechanism to ensure that such investments are continued to be held in local hands, that some effort should be made to try to stimulate that kind of interest. We have seen the long march of institutions developed by Barbadians over the years taken to a level of expertise that others have seen that they are worth something, that they've bought them over. And you can, from the long list, start from the Arawak cement plant, Bartel, right down now to Satikor. I think that it's time that we begin to stop and think as to what is happening to our national entities. And some effort must be made, especially since the credit unions seem to be so somewhat, they seem to have a lot of cash around, that some effort through that mechanism be made to see if we can at least hold on to this last institution and maintain its national image.
How do you believe we can hold on to this one in these circumstances, though?
Well, for one thing, I mean, I think even the amount that is being offered per share, that we can come up with a means in which we can offer, at least we can top that, $2 to $3 per share, and at least try to get a bit more in relation to the value of the shareholding for the existing shareholders. So a share offer coming from among the existing shareholders, the local shareholders, should stimulate some interest and encourage Barbadians to begin to invest in entities that are that have developed like this. So I know if your guest will comment on that, but if a share offer is put on the table right now in excess of what is being offered, if that would not at least bring about some measure of stability in what we're already discussing.
Mr. Skeet, you want to respond to that? And just a reminder that the program is not locked down to this issue exclusively. We are taking the opportunity to talk about it because there are people out there who are worried, especially shareholders, and it has wider implications, as you're hearing. I mean, this is a country where we are being told time and time again about how much money is in the banks and the need for Barbadians to invest. And sometimes we are given the impression that we should feel a great degree of guilt. But you know what is happening here? The people who try to talk like that in this country completely ignore the climate and the environment in which Barbadians are being asked to invest. And we begin with the woman who called us earlier, who said that this is about the third or fourth time that she's put her money into some entity in Barbados and ended up feeling that she was disadvantaged as a minority shareholder. Now, in that environment, pray tell, who is going to feel comfortable investing their money in these companies around here? And I want to say also, Mr. Skeet, I mean, it's something that I was checking there. You know that in the pandemic, internationally, what is happening? You know, rich people getting richer and poor people getting poorer?
That's true.
This is a big issue, huh? And I want to, I put it on the table here. I don't believe, you see, you could go to the United States and look at it because they are tracking it.
Hello.
The people in the U.S., yes, I'm still here. The U.S. are tracking this, huh? But we're not tracking it. But, you know, you're watching. You want to see how after 5-10 years or so, and even before that, you know, where is this taking us? So that's why this discussion about investment in entities and takeovers and that sort of thing is particularly relevant at this time.